This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Tuesday, September 23rd. I'm Katie Dayton for The Wall Street Journal. Changes to an employment visa that's popular among tech companies have rattled the industry, leading to frantic phone calls, legal briefings, and last-minute flights back to the US. We dive into what happened when Trump overhauled the H-1B and ask what comes next. Then we catch up with Duolingo, the language learning app that's navigating the waters of investing in AI without aggravating its human staff and users. But first, President Trump rocked the tech world late last week with a sweep of changes to the H-1B visa, a program that allows American firms to hire highly skilled foreign workers. The visa's become popular among tech companies, many of which went into crisis mode when the Trump administration said it would add a new fee to H-1B applications. Our reporter Ray Smith spent the weekend reporting the story. So Ray, what reasons did Trump give for making these sweeping changes to the H-1B?
One of the reasons is they felt that this was an unfair system to U.S. workers. The idea was that we have people coming into this country basically taking American jobs away from highly skilled Americans. And that was the premise behind why they feel like they need to crack down on a system that they believe was being used by tech companies to avoid hiring American workers.
Can you explain which kinds of companies are affected most by these changes?
It's primarily tech companies. Amazon, Google, and Tesla are among the biggest users of these visas. And these visas let companies bring foreign workers to the U.S. on a temporary basis. These workers, overwhelmingly, they come from India, and they fill jobs in fields such as like software development, computer science, and engineering. So it's a lot of tech jobs, and it's especially young, skilled people coming in from India.
Can you talk me through some of the anecdotes you heard from the tech industry over the weekend? What did their scramble patterns look like?
In some cases, we heard of people being instructed by their companies, like they might have been in meetings, and they were told to rush out of those meetings and make sure they get a flight back to the U.S., you know, before the deadline. I talked with an immigration attorney. She represents tech workers, and she had a client that was actually on an international cruise. And so there was no way they were going to be able to make it back to the U.S. in time before the deadline. Some of the other things we heard were people who had difficulty booking flights to the U.S. because this was last minute. So we heard of some people having to think about whether they should fly into Guam or Hawaii to try to get here before the deadline. And then a colleague of mine talked with someone who had, even after he got the clarification, he still was a little bit uneasy about leaving the country. His H-1B status doesn't go into effect for several weeks. He still wouldn't risk traveling to visit his family in India. His mother has heart problems. You know, he fears needing to choose between the career he spent years building and being with his family should an emergency occur. So it's just these heartrending situations of people just being in limbo about what they should do, what they can do.
And now we have a little bit more of a clarification. What, as of now, we're recording this on Monday afternoon, are the new restrictions on the H-1B?
So it appears that it doesn't apply to every single H-1B visa holder. What the White House said on Saturday was that the changes only apply to new visas and not renewals, current visa holders, or 2025 lottery winners. So it doesn't affect the ability of existing visa holders to travel back and forth. And they also clarified that the $100,000 fee is a one-time fee, not an annual fee. But we're not sure if it's totally resolved.
From what you've heard from your sources, how is the tech world anticipating this will change hiring practices and the overall makeup of their staff in the long run?
It's raising some really big questions for companies, especially for startups and smaller companies because they don't have the resources like, say, a Microsoft does to pay this $100,000 for each employee. And so there are questions about how is this going to affect their hiring and will it lead to this have or have nots? Are tech companies going to just say, we'll only pay for like certain stars and then the rest will just, you will figure out how to hire a U.S. worker or outsource some other way?
That was WSJ reporter Ray Smith. Coming up, we take a look at how Duolingo's promise to become an AI-first company is playing out. That's after the break.
This episode is brought to you by the RE/MAX Collection. Seasoned real estate agents who help open the door to the most luxurious properties worldwide. Visit remax.com/luxury to learn more. Each office independently owned and operated.
Duolingo made its name as the language learning app with a chaotic green owl for a mascot. But it generated controversy earlier this year after its CEO sent staff an email calling for the company to become, quote, AI first. The WSJ Leadership Institute's Bell Lin spoke to Duolingo's chief technology officer, Severin Hacker, about the fallout from the memo's publication on stage at the recent WSJ Technology Council summit.
The memo, it was controversial because of its perceived stance on favoring AI instead of humans, and you've since faced backlash from customers who question whether there might be layoffs at Duolingo and if a company focused on teaching people languages could function with fewer people on board. So let's start there. What happened? What do you think went wrong?
Our mission is to provide the best education and make it universally available. We started with languages because it's one of the few subjects that people learn both inside and outside of schools. And we didn't want to deal with schools from day one. So that's why I started with languages. That's the mission of the company. Now, when we saw the AI revolution with GPT-4, we saw this is a massive, massive opportunity for us. And let me explain why. So if you want to learn anything, whether it's chess, golf, languages, math, music, the single best way to learn is with a one-on-one human tutor. If we all had infinite resources, that's how we would learn. And that's in fact how people used to learn in the past when they had infinite resources, like kings and royalty. They would hire personal one-on-one tutor for their kids. And the reason we don't have that is because it's so expensive. And now, for the first time with AI, we believe we can achieve our mission because AI could allow us to teach as well as a one-on-one tutor, but at the cost of AI, which is much, 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 much lower than a human tutor. So that's the main reason why we wrote the memo, and we see this as a massive, massive opportunity to teach better, and everything else followed from that.
So let's talk about AI first. Can you define what that means, especially as a founder and as a CTO operator? In practice and in reality, what does it really mean?
The big question is, like, how can you use AI to teach better? A lot of people ask, how can we use AI to be more productive, or everybody should use ChatGPT and AI note takers, etc. I think that's all good and fine, and we obviously do that as well at Duolingo. We use Cursor and AI for development, software engineering, etc. I'm very close to that. But I think you're missing the point if you don't use AI to build new products. Like, what can you build now that you previously couldn't build? So just to give you an analogy, when mobile happened, at first, every restaurant, every website built a mobile app. And that was not mobile first, really. It was just like, oh yeah, now we have a companion app for our service or product or whatever. But then, at some point, we had Uber. And Uber was something that you couldn't have built before the smartphone. And I think that's what I'm interested in, and I think that's what your company should think about. It's like, what is the Uber? What is the product that you couldn't have built before AI?
How are you actually putting that into practice? Are there new AI features that your users have latched onto? How are you actually building AI into Duolingo?
The feature we're most proud of or most excited about is this feature called Video Call with Lily. So if you have used Duolingo in the major languages, we have this feature, Video Call with Lily, and you can talk to her. And the vision there is to make her the best possible conversation partner. So as part of learning a language, you have to practice conversation. And it's, again, a feature that we couldn't have built before AI. We actually tried and it didn't work. But now you can actually build it. And we see tremendous uptake on that feature.
How do you push the boundary in terms of, you talked about back in the day, kings and queens could have their own personal tutor. Is the idea that Duolingo becomes the ChatGPT AI tutor that pushes even further into what people can learn? How do you continue to evolve how the product works?
People say, okay, AI is going to replace humans, et cetera, et cetera. And that's obviously a negative. And I actually don't think that's going to happen, or not nearly as fast as people think. But on the positive side, AI is also really good at teaching you things. We could get into a world where, if you guys remember Matrix, maybe I'm dating myself, but there they basically just download the jiu-jitsu or whatever into the brain. So it's like instantly, 10 seconds, you know, now you know the skill. Now you know languages. So I think that's probably a little bit far out in the future, but it's never been more realistic. For Duolingo right now, really the focus is on teaching better, teaching more. So, you know, we have been able to expand our courses by a lot. So we launched over 100 courses this year, and this is thanks to AI. Previously, it would have taken us tens or maybe even 100 years, if not for AI.
That was the WSJ Leadership Institute's Belle Lin speaking to Duolingo's Chief Technology Officer Severin Hacker at the recent WSJ Technology Council Summit. And that's it for Tech News Briefing. Today's show was produced by Julie Chang, with Deputy Editor Chris Sinsley and Supervising Producer Melanie Roy. I'm Katie Dayton for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back later this morning with TMB Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.
Corporate megastores are spending millions lobbying DC politicians on one-sided policies that send small businesses tumbling. They want to enact harmful credit card mandates that take resources away from your local credit union and community bank, leaving Main Street businesses with less access to credit, making it harder for your family to pay for everyday goods like gas and groceries. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.